Okay, now for really, I think, one of the most important stories I have perhaps covered in my entire career in medical journalism, which now spans, you know, around 15 years of working in television and media to discuss medical issues. Something gigantic has happened this week, at least I think it is, and you can decide for yourself as we weigh into this. To begin with, there is a world-renowned vaccine creator that went on his LinkedIn and put out a letter to every single professional in the world, essentially telling them we must stop the vaccination program immediately. Here's just a couple of excerpts from his letter. Let's take a look at this. As a dedicated virologist and vaccine expert, I only make an exception when health authorities allow vaccines to be administered in ways that threaten public health, most certainly when scientific evidence is being ignored. The present extremely critical situation forces me to spread this emergency call. As the unprecedented extent of human intervention in the COVID-19 pandemic is now at risk of resulting in a global catastrophe without equal, this call cannot sound loudly enough. He goes on, sufficient scientific evidence has been brought to the table. Unfortunately, it remains untouched by those who have the power to act. How long can one ignore the problem when there is at present massive evidence that viral immune escape is now threatening humanity? We can hardly say we didn't know or were not warned. In this agonizing letter, I put all of my reputation and credibility at stake. I expect from you, guardians of mankind, at least the same. It is of utmost urgency. Do open the debate. By all means, turn the tide. I think he goes on and has this statement to make. A form of a disclaimer, I suppose. For those who may have some difficulty in understanding how mass vaccination drives viral immune escape, it will suffice to watch infectivity and morbidity rates in those countries who have now succeeded in vaccinating millions of people in just a few weeks, e.g. UK, Israel, USA. Whereas these countries are now enjoying declining infectivity rates, they will undoubtedly start to suffer from a steep incline in COVID-19 cases in the weeks to come. The steep decline we're seeing right now may be followed by a short-lived plateau, but a subsequent steep incline of severe disease cases is inevitable. These are shocking statements. And to be clear, just so you recognize, this man could not be more pro-vaccine. In fact, he may be one of the most highly ranked and talented vaccine creators in the world. Let's take a look at the resume of the man that is screaming at the top of the mountain right now. This is Geert van den Bosch, PhD. He was at GSK Biologicals. He was a senior project leader of adolescent vaccine projects, new biotech vaccine development and QC/QA manager, head of adjuvant technologies and alternative deliveries and R&D. At Novartis Vaccines and Diagnostics, he was the director, research program leader, and head of adjuvants. At Solvay Biologicals, global project director of the influenza vaccines. For the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, he was the senior program officer, global health vaccine discovery. For Global Alliance for Vaccine and Immunization, which we refer to as Gavi, he was the program manager. And at UNIVAC, he was the chief innovation and scientific officer. He's also at the German Center for Infectious Research, head of the Vaccine Development Office. And at Verico, he is was the managing director. Okay, this guy is anything but an anti-vaxxer. He is as pro-vaccine as you can get, yet there is something that has got him terrified. Now, that letter really only speaks to the professionals in his field. But luckily for us, he did an interview, I believe it was last week. And normally, you know, we would love to bring Geert on, but I think this interview is so perfect that I'm going to do something we rarely do here on the High Wire. We're going to go through the interview as it appeared. So I want to make sure that you recognize that all the credit needs to go to the doctor that created this YouTube video and does this interview. But let us walk through what I believe may prove to be the most important interview in the history of mankind. Let's get started. Here's how the video starts out.
I have the pleasure of having with me Gert van den Bosch from Belgium. The difference is that Gert is truly an international vaccine developer, and he's here to share some very important and unique perspectives on where we are now in terms of the COVID pandemic. So, pleasure to have you here with me, Gert. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me, Philip.
Wonderful, wonderful. Listen, I mean, I think the first thing that we have to clarify is that we have to explain you are someone who is in the vaccine development business, so to speak. What has that background been like?
Well, I have a background essentially in, as far as vaccines are concerned, in industry as well as in the non-for-profit sector. So I have been working with Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Gavi, especially concentrating on vaccines for global health. Mm-hmm. And I've also been working with several different companies, vaccine companies, developing, of course, essentially prophylactic vaccines. And my main focus of interest has always been, in fact, the design of vaccines. So the concept, how can we educate the immune system in ways that are, to some extent, more efficient than we do right now with our conventional vaccines.
Right. And so in effect, this is the area of work you've been in. You develop vaccines. You are as well working with the Ebola vaccine as well, one of the really, really dangerous viruses we have out there in the world. How does that work? Is that easy to do?
Well, I was not, let me be very clear, I was a coordinator of the Ebola program at Gavi. So we were interacting with several different vaccine companies that were developing Ebola vaccines, because it was important for Gavi to make the right choice, the right vaccine, in order you know, for this vaccine to be rolled out in the Western African countries that had this severe Ebola crisis back a number of years ago. So that was not, let's say, operational, practical work. This was more a role of coordination, but of course was also a role of assessing what would be the impact of using some of these vaccines in larger populations and in an area where an epidemic is really going on, because that's a very particular and peculiar situation.
All right, so obviously he starts out by, you know, getting into the credentials of Gert van den Bosch here. And I think there's a couple of things that I found striking right away. What he says is really his specialty is on the design of vaccines. He understands the design of all the vaccines being made in the world. He's worked for Gavi, and in that case, he oversaw the Ebola vaccine program. And his area of specialty is understanding the effect of using vaccines and choosing the specific vaccines and its impact in mass vaccination programs, okay? Have we established that if some guy is gonna have an issue with a mass vaccination campaign, this is the guy we all thought was supposed to be in charge, right? But for some reason, he's not. Let's hear what he goes on to say.
If we have 2020 vision at the moment, when we look back at the pandemic, and where we started from. And I've always said that at the time when the pandemic started, when it got from China into Italy, into Europe, into the UK, I thought that the only way that we could manage this is to lock down and to prevent the spread of this, apparently, this very dangerous virus. We do have to stand back and see whether or not those decisions were correct. But as we said, hindsight is 2020. What would you say now, as we look back at the decisions we made then? Were we about on the right track? Did we make any mistakes?
Well, frankly speaking, from the very beginning, and I mean, there is many people who can witness this or testify this. I always said that it was a bad idea to do lockdowns that would also affect the younger people, that we would prevent younger people from having contact, from being exposed. Because remember, the big difference back then was, of course, that we had a viral strain, COVID strain, that was circulating, dominant strain, and that was not highly infectious as those that we are seeing right now. Of course, when a new virus gets into a population, it immediately gets to the folks that have, you know, weak immunity. And we know these people. This is to a large majority, of course, elderly people, people that have underlying diseases or are otherwise immune suppressed, etc. And of course, I mean, it was certainly the right thing to do to protect these people and for them also to isolate. But we have to distinguish, frankly speaking, and that is what we have not been doing, between those people that have strong innate immunity. I mean, it's not, you cannot see, when you see a person, you don't know this, but we know that young people have quite decent innate immune response. And therefore, they are naturally protected. And even more, I mean, if they get in contact with coronavirus, it will boost their natural immunity. So therefore, from the very beginning, I disapproved, you know, the fact that schools got closed and universities, and that youngsters were preventing even from having contact with each other. That situation is, of course, completely different if you look at vulnerable people. The virus comes in the population. There is no humoral immunity. There is no immunity at all, in fact. So nobody has been in contact. So the youngsters, they can rely on good innate immunity. Elderly people, I mean, the innate immunity is waning. It gets increasingly replaced by antigen-specific, by specific immunity as people get older. So these people very, very clearly needed to be protected. But it has taken a lot of time before we understood, in fact, how exactly the immune response and the virus were interacting. So there has been a lot of confusion, a lot of mistakes made. Well, mistakes, I mean, retrospectively. And that has also led to, you know, bad control right from the beginning, I would say.
All right, so I think there's some important points to be made here. And by the way, if you're watching The High Wire for the first time, as it turns out, we actually geek out on the science. If you're a person that's saying, I wonder what's going on here, but what you want is a bumper sticker slogan about to make you feel better, then go watch some other network. What we're going to get into and where he's about to go is so deep and profound and powerful that you're going to have to actually care about science. What we're going to get into is the science here with Geert. But let's be specific at what he's pointing out. When there is any time there's a pandemic, when there's a virus that starts spreading, the first people that really we see it affect are those that don't have waning immune systems, the elderly, those that are sick. It's exactly what we saw over the age of 65 with other comorbidities. And we talked about the Great Barrington Declaration. There's now over 50,000 scientists and experts and doctors that have all said exactly what Geert is saying here. He is saying that there's the actual, those are the new numbers. There we go. So we're over 50,000, over 750,000 concerned citizens. If you haven't signed the Great Barrington Declaration, you better check it out online and get your signature in there, because these things matter. But what he's telling us is that we should have protected that, you know, extremely vulnerable population, something the High Wire has supported from day one. It's what we've been saying. But what also the High Wire has been saying is those that are young, that are healthy, they need to get out and they need to go catch this illness. And as he pointed out, they're only going to just enhance their immune system. It's going to be made even stronger. He gets into a detail I hadn't really thought about and didn't really fully understand, that once you get older, once you become, you know, when you're in those, the later years of your life, you no longer have humoral immunity, or otherwise known as your innate immune system, which is sort of this initial sort of general immune system that just attacks and kicks butt. You're stuck with antigen immunity, meaning the things that you've caught through your life, the memory, it's going to be looking for those things, but it doesn't have the ability to take on a brand new virus or some variant we haven't seen. But our children, they've got that in spades, and college students and healthy people, it's just rough. And we've just got, you know, Mike Tyson's in there ready to go and take out any brand new virus. So we should have been out in the population, dealing it with it, while the elderly that don't have that innate immune system that we do, they should have been secured. Exactly what the Great Barrington Declaration has been discussing. And obviously, scientists and virologists agree around the world. All right, now let's start getting into more details. Here we go.
There's still a rise in cases. Countries had to try and lock down, mask mandates, and so on. But we all had the hope that vaccines would come and break the cycle. This is where clearly now, from your expertise, you seem to have a different thought about how we should have been thinking about vaccines then and even now. What is your perspective?
Well, my perspective was and still is that if you go to war, you better make sure that you have the right weapon. And the weapon in itself can be an excellent weapon. And that is what I'm saying really about the current vaccines. I mean, it's just brilliant people who have been making these vaccines in no time and with regulatory approval and everything. So the weapon in itself is excellent. Question is this the right weapon for the kind of war that is going on right now? And there my answer is definitely no. Because these are prophylactic vaccines, and prophylactic vaccines should typically not be administered to people who are exposed to high infectious pressure. So don't forget, we are administering these vaccines in the heat of a pandemic. So in other words, while we are preparing our weapon, we are fully attacked by the virus. The virus is everywhere. So that is a very different scenario from using such vaccines in a setting where the vaccinee is barely or not exposed to the virus. And I'm saying this because if you have a high infectious pressure, it's so easy for the virus to jump from one person to the other. So if your immune response, however, is just mounting, as we see right now with a number of people who get their first dose. They get their first dose, the antibodies are not fully mature, or titers are maybe not very high. So their immune response is suboptimal. But they are in the midst of this war. While they are mounting an immune response, they are fully attacked by the virus. And every single time, I mean, this is textbook knowledge, every single time you have an immune response that is suboptimal, in the presence of an infection, in the presence of a virus that infects that person, you are at risk for immune escape. So that means that the virus can escape to the immune response. And that is why I'm saying that these vaccines, I mean, in their own right, are of course excellent, but to use them in the midst of a pandemic and do mass vaccination, because then you provide within a very short period of time the population with high antibody titers, so the virus comes under enormous pressure. I mean, that wouldn't matter if you can eradicate the virus, if you can prevent infection. But these vaccines don't prevent infection. They protect against disease. Because we are just, unfortunately, we look no further than the end of our nose. In a sense that hospitalization, that's all what counts, you know, getting people away from the hospital. But in the meantime, we are not realizing that we give all the time during this pandemic, by our interventions, the opportunity to escape to the immune system. And that is, of course, a very, very, very dangerous thing, especially if we realize that these guys, they only need 10 hours to replicate. So if we think that by making new vaccines and new vaccine against the new infectious strains, we are going to catch up. It's impossible to catch up. I mean, the virus is not going to wait till we have those vaccines ready. I mean, this thing continues. And as I was saying, the thing is, I mean, if you do this in the midst of a pandemic, that is an enormous problem. These vaccines are excellent, but they are not made for administration to millions of people in the heat of a pandemic.
I hope that all of you will go back when we, you know, get done with this and go back and watch just that section. There's so much to get out of that. But let's make it clear. One of the kings of vaccines, one of the greatest vaccine developers and overseer of most of our programs around the world, the important ones, is telling you, as someone that describes, I study how the vaccine works. And he tells you this vaccine is not designed to stop infection. Personally, I think the discussion may be over there. So when Fauci says we're waiting for data to come in, I've been thinking, you know, I think the data would have been here by now. This guy is telling you, Geert says, I know for a fact, I've been in all these laboratories. He knows what this is. He's been around over the last 20 years of studying mRNA vaccines and viral vector vaccines. This guy has been in all those laboratories, in fact, running most of them. So when he tells you this vaccine is not designed to stop the infection and therefore transmission, I would take him for his word. And so what he's saying, and look, he's doing his job. He believes in vaccines. He's telling you, this is an excellent product. I would challenge him on that, but it doesn't matter. He's saying this is an excellent product, but it's the wrong weapon. It's the wrong weapon for the war we're in. A prophylactic vaccine cannot be used once the war is upon you, once you're already under assault. He talks about something we have already talked with you a lot about. We are very concerned about people that get that first shot, and then we see the news reports that after their first shot, they got the natural infection. That is the worst case scenario for some reasons we haven't even talked about. We brought up antibody-dependent enhancement, that somehow that could backfire on you and make the virus more deadly. But what he's saying is you're creating a worst case scenario where you are mounting what he calls a suboptimal response. It's not the optimal response by the vaccine. Your body's trying to create the antibodies and it's only gotten started after the first shot or right when you get the second shot, and already you're under attack. And so the virus is going to win. And when I was thinking about him describing it, it reminded me of a self-defense class that I was in at one point, where the teacher was talking about, you know, look, if you have a safe under your bed that has a handgun, you probably shouldn't have, you know, the magazine and the handgun all together, I guess, in case your kids get in there, whatever. He said, so you're going to have a handgun and, you know, a safe. You want to open it. Then you put the magazine in your gun and then you're ready to handle it. So let's be clear. This is a perfect weapon and a perfect scenario. Should your dog start barking and you hear that someone's outside your house and you're worried that somebody might be casing your house, you open up your safe. You grab your gun, you pop in your magazine, you're ready to go to defend your house. But let's be clear. If you wake up in your bedroom and you see across the room there's an assailant standing there, by the time you reach over and try and get into your safe, get your magazine, the gun, that assailant is on you, and now you are in trouble. You will not, that gun will be useless to you. And I think about what Geert's saying, that's what he's telling you. This would have been great if the virus was coming sometime and you had time to prepare for it and they still got to get through your front door. It's already attacking you. At that point, the gun is no longer the appropriate weapon. In this case, natural immunity would be. In this case, hand-to-hand combat. They're charging at your bed. You're just sat up in bed. You got to jump up and handle that person with your hands as best you can. That's your best case scenario. Doesn't matter that you have a perfectly designed weapon that could do something. It can't do it under this scenario. It will be just developing. You'll just be loading this gun. You'll just be developing antibodies, and you will be caught by surprise. And that is the worst case scenario. And now we're teaching the virus how to get around this vaccine. It's now learning because it's not a full mounted defense. And now it's understanding how the vaccine is working. And it's going to start creating other problems, which he's going to get deeper into. And then when we think about those people like, well, I mean, you know, it stops the variants or the whole discussion. He says something that I found so shocking. He says, you must understand, this virus mutates within 10 hours. So if somebody's having a suboptimal response, it is going to mutate around that suboptimal response and become stronger and more powerful within 10 hours. And so he's saying, we're trying to catch up with that. We're getting in this race. What are we going to keep making vaccines for all the variants as they appear? Or as Eugenio very well put out, if you're making a third shot, doesn't that mean you're not trusting the two shots is going to work? You're darn right. This guy's telling you they're not going to work. But it's not going to be a third shot or a fourth shot. this tweet came to mind. Look at this tweet. This is this guy. Figure below shows thousands of COVID mutations so far. Each point denotes a mutation. Now stop panicking every time you hear of a new mutation with a country or city brand name. Look at all of those dots, folks. This is the reality. Thousands. This thing mutates like crazy. We have thousands. Are we going to take that many vaccines to handle all the variants? This is the wrong weapon for the wrong war. It couldn't be better said, but he's going to get into some really, really stark details. Take a look at this.
You mentioned this in your paper. It's as equivalent to using either a partial dose of antibiotics in an antimicrobial or in a bacterial infection, where you then produce superbugs. Is this the kind of example that you're alluding to?
Well, that is a very good parallel. It's also the parallel I'm using actually in the paper we just posted on LinkedIn, which, you know, should be so open for everybody. I mean, it's pure science. Because as you were pointing out, Philip, the thing is, the rule is, it's very simple. I mean, same with antibiotics. Either the antibiotics do not match very well with the bug. That's not good. That's why we are making antibiograms. You know, to first identify which is this germ, and then we choose the antibiotics. We need to have a very good match, otherwise there could be resistance. So when I compare this to the current situation, do we have a good match with our antibodies? No, at this point in time, we don't have a good match anymore, because we have this kind of like almost heterologous variants, so that differ from the original strain. So the match isn't very good anymore. And hence we see people are still protected, but they are already shedding the virus. So that is one thing. The other thing is the quantity, of course. You tell people, you know, you take your antibiotics according to the prescription. Please don't, as soon as you feel well, that doesn't mean that you can stop the antibiotics. Same here. And I give just one example. If you now give people just like one dose, I mean, they are in the process of mounting their antibodies, the antibodies still need to fully mature, etc. So this is a suboptimal situation. We are putting them in a suboptimal situation with regard to their immune protection. And on the other hand, they are in the midst of the war. They are fully attacked by all, you know, by all these kinds of highly infectious variants. So, I mean, it's very clear that this is driving immune escape and will ultimately drive resistance to the vaccines. So my point is, yes, Flip, it's very similar. There is one difference. The virus needs living cells. I mean, if you're driving immune escape, but the guy has no chance to jump on somebody else, who cares? Mm-hmm. The situation is now different because we are in the midst of a war. There is a high infectious pressure. So the likelihood that an immune escape immediately finds another living cell, that means another host, is very, very high. It's per definition. It's the definition almost of a pandemic.
I mean, he says what I've been saying. You know, we may look back and say Louis Pasteur and antibiotics. I used to say, you know, vaccines aren't the greatest invention of the 20th century. Antibiotics are. But now we're looking at the end of the antibiotic age. And if it turns out we only made it like 100 years, we were able to stop infection. But by giving antibiotics, we were teaching bacteria how to get smarter and more powerful. And now they're getting around the antibiotics. We've all seen this, right? The overuse of it in cattle, the overprescription in people. So many scientists and doctors are panicked about it, and most pharmaceutical companies have stopped making all antibiotics because they're saying that the bacteria are mutating so fast now that any product they go into development on, by the time they get it out in the market, the bacteria is already figuring its way around it. Well, how do you avoid that? You got to kill it dead. You got to win the battle. If you got the right weapon, it's got to kill it dead immediately. But what he's saying, just like not taking all of your prescription, all of that antibiotics, which I never really understood that. Why do I got to keep taking it? I'm feeling better. Now I recognize, because you don't want your body to turn into a mutation factory that is going to turn this, what was just a, you know, benign bacteria or just mildly infectious, into a deadly killer. Like we now see SARS, MRSA, and CRS, and these different things that are killing hundreds of thousands of people in our hospitals now all the time. This vaccine could do that because it's having a suboptimal response, just like, you know, an unmatched antibiotic. And what he's saying, if the vaccine is matched up directly with this virus and you've gotten both your shots, you've mounted defense, it'll do a good job at beating it. But most of you aren't going to have gotten to the full effect of the vaccine by the time you're already under attack. And so therefore, you're going to have this suboptimal response. And now you are going to be responsible for turning this 0.4% death rate virus, which is a nothing burger essentially, except for those in a really high risk category. Now you're going to start raising the risk for everybody and turning it into a deadly killer. Let's get deeper into it.
It raises a simple question that somebody has put in front of us here, which is, it's perfectly common sense. What do we do?
That question is very easy. I mean, we need to do a better job when we are confronted with situations that seem very dramatic, like, you know, an epidemic. Our generation has not, you know, been living in times where there are epidemics or pandemics. And so we immediately take action and jump on the beast with the tools we have, instead of analyzing what is really going on. And one thing that I thought was extremely interesting was, and it's something that was not really understood, we know that a number of people are asymptomatically infected. So they are infected, but they don't develop severe symptoms. Of course, they can have some mild symptoms, upper respiratory disease, whatever. So the question is, what exactly happens with those folks that they can eliminate the virus? They eliminate the virus. They will transmit it. They will shed it for like a week or so. And then they eliminate this. And you could say, yeah, of course, we know that antibodies eliminate. Oh, wait a minute. The antibodies come later. You have first this surge of, you know, shedding of the virus. And it's only afterwards that you see, you know, a moderate and short-lived rise of antibodies. So the antibodies cannot be responsible for elimination of the virus. So what is responsible for elimination of the virus? Luckily enough, we have a number of brilliant scientists, independent brilliant scientists, that have now increasingly been showing, and there is increasing evidence, that what in fact is happening is that NK cells are taking care of the virus. So NK cells, the virus gets into these epithelial cells and starts to replicate, but NK cells get activated and they will kill the cell, you know, in which the virus tries to replicate. So I was saying that the virus needs to rely on a living cell. So you kill that cell, it's gone, it's all over. So why we have the solution? We have the solution in the pathogenesis because some people eliminate it.
Absolutely.
All right. So this is really, it's amazing because what he's talking about is something that we've been discussing. One of the things that we keep hearing is the vaccine creates more antibodies than the natural infection does. Therefore, this is the first vaccine ever that's better than natural infection. It's simply not true because of what he's describing to you here. The innate immune system you have has got something that vaccine is not doing. That vaccine is making antibodies, which he says is the after effect. That's the last part. Like, that's the cleanup crew. The real butt kickers, the first line of defense, is already in your natural immune system. It's called NK cells, natural killer cells. Now, what these are essentially, and there's a lot of science now looking at this, are these sort of cells that float around. We now believe it's about 10% of your white blood cells. They're these lymphocytes, and they're always monitoring your blood. They're bumping against all the other cells and making sure, oh yeah, that's a healthy cell, just checking it out. They're just walking around. They're like armed guards, making sure that everything's okay. But as soon as a cell is infected with cancer or with a virus, it knows it. And then it has this amazing ability to, you know, get in there and discover, you know, through the interaction with interferons. But it says, oh, wait a minute, this is an infected cell. So it goes in, grabs a hold of that cell, and immediately puts out some like deadly goo that penetrates the cell and kills it dead. This is what has been happening for everybody that's not vaccinated that is out there. All of our children, our babies and our children have amazing natural killer cells. Young people, this is that humoral immunity that the elderly no longer have. This is your innate immune system. It's running and coursing through every vein in your body. So if you're terrified of this virus, just know you have this amazing natural killer, these power warriors that are going to go in and just kill the cells dead. Only after that, then, does your body now get into an antibody production space to just finally clean up the last little bit. But science thinks antibodies were the greatest part of this. They're dead wrong. That is the weakest part of the immune response, especially to this coronavirus. They are not inspiring your NK cells. They're coming in for the after effect, saying, see, we got more of the cleanup crew than you did. I don't want a bunch of maids and plumbers. I want the warriors fighting for me. But this vaccine doesn't do that. And now it starts getting really, really scary. Get ready. I hope you're ready for this. But if you're like me, you must be sitting there right now and saying, oh my God, it's now all starting to make some sense. By the end of the show, I am telling you, you are going to be ready to have a conversation you've never been able to have. You are going to be able to say, I now know what happened in this pandemic, and I know what we're going to do if we keep vaccinating. Get ready. Strap yourself in. This ride is about to get really rough. Here we go.
It raises the point that I've always been saying, is that we haven't spent enough time understanding how the virus impacts the body and understanding how the pandemic then will impact the world. We've spent all of our time just going for solutions. Has that been a mistake?
Of course, this has been the most important mistake, I think. I'm not sure many people, and I was part of them. I was just explaining, we don't understand our weapon because we don't understand that prophylactic vaccines should not be used in the midst of an epidemic. And we don't understand exactly what the virus is doing. So we go to a war and we don't know our enemy. We don't understand the strategy of our enemy and we don't know how our weapon works. I mean, how is that going to go? That is a fundamental problem to begin with.
I understand and I completely accept that. But at the same time, I am still thinking that if the governments don't respond in some way, because they have to be seen to be doing something, they seem to be in a lose-lose situation. If they don't do anything, they're going to be criticized. And if they do something, they're going to be criticized. Is that a fair statement to make?
I don't think so. What was this oath of, what's the name of the guy? Hippocrates?
Mm-hmm.
You know the oath?
The first, do no harm.
Okay. Well, I mean, it wouldn't matter if you start vaccinating people and even it doesn't work. Problem is that we induce a long-lived antibody response. And as a matter of fact, we know, I mean, that is not my knowledge, it's all published. Problem is that we fail to put the pieces of the puzzle together. Fact is that these long-lived antibodies, which have high specificity, of course, for the virus, they outcompete our natural antibodies because their natural antibodies, they have a very broad spectrum, but they have low affinity, right? And so by doing this, even if your antibodies don't work anymore because there is resistance or, you know, the strains are too different from the original strain, we still, these antibodies, specific antibodies, will still continue to outcompete your natural antibodies. And that is a huge problem because I was saying just a few minutes ago, these natural antibodies, they provide you with broad protection. This protection is, yes, it is variant non-specific. It doesn't matter what variant you get. It doesn't even matter what type of coronavirus is coming in. They will protect you unless, of course, you suppress this level of innate immunity or it is, for example, outcompeted by long-lived specific antibodies. And so it's not like, okay, you know, you missed it. Okay, let's try again. No, you did some harm. I mean, this is different from drugs. Immunizing somebody is installing a new software on your computer. Don't forget, I mean, these antibodies, they will be recalled every single time you're encountering a coronavirus, right? I mean, you cannot just erase this. So this is very serious.
This is not like a drug. This is very serious. This is, he uses the term long-lived antibodies. I'm going to use sort of a football way to describe. Now, I think this video is pretty clear, but I really want to make sure that we all get this because I actually learned something this week that I wasn't fully aware of, and now it is crystal clear. But let me see if I can help make it crystal clear for anybody that's sort of thinking about what he said. Now, here's what he is describing, and this is sort of, if you ever, you know, played any sport, soccer, football, hopefully this makes some sense to you. But on our team, in our immune system, we have what are called non-specific antibodies. They have, he called it broad spectrum. It's broad spectrum, low affinity. They don't care who is coming across. In this case, let's look at the other team. Let's say these are all variants of coronavirus. We got the A variant, F, T, R, L, Y, X. Okay. Now it doesn't matter who gets the ball in this case. When we have non-specific, anyone that comes across. So let's say X gets the ball, running back gets the ball, comes running over here, boom, right here. Non-specific antibodies, boom, tackled, dead, not going anywhere. But let's say it's a different play. Let's say they decide that, you know, we're going to run Y. So they run Y with a roundabout coming through here. Boom, it doesn't matter. Non-specific, we see the Y too. It doesn't matter. We're going to go after anything because it's non-specific. It's brilliant. These are brilliant antibodies you have as your natural immune system. What if it's a trick play? What if they toss it to A and over here tries to get through? Doesn't matter. Bam, non-specific's going to go after the A variant too. This is how your immune system works, and it's fantastic. Now let's talk about what happens when we're given a vaccine. All right, here we go. Let's go to the next one. So in this case, we're now going to move into vaccine-induced antibodies. As he said, they're long-lived. They don't go away. This isn't a drug that's going to wear off 2 days from now. We say, you know what? You had an allergic reaction. We're not going to do that drug anymore. It is in you forever. There's no getting this thing out. And what did it just do? It created what he called specific antibodies. Specific antibodies is now what we're going to discuss. So now in this scenario playing football, essentially everyone on the team has been told, you're looking for X. The antibody created, in this case, for the spike protein of SARS-CoV-2 that we first saw at the very beginning before there's any variants, our vaccine is going to make you fight that really well. So how does that work? Well, it's great. The coach basically said, I know for a fact that X, the running back there, is going to get the ball. So everyone on the team key on X. Great. So X gets the ball. Boom, comes through. It doesn't matter, man. They're all going to jump in there. Yeehaw! Yay, the vaccine's awesome. It totally stopped the virus. Okay? But now here is the problem he's talking about. This entire team can only respond to X. It only understands that it's an antibody specific to the virus it's looking for. So what happens if Y gets the ball? What if the team, they know, it doesn't matter, the coach said it was going to be X, it doesn't matter. Y gets the ball, Y comes around, boom, goes through here, can go anywhere they want. X does nothing. Boom, win, we're in the end zone, we just won, virus wins the whole game. Because no one on the team was waiting for X, was planned for X. In fact, they were told, don't go near X. I mean, don't go near Y. Okay? All right. But here's something that I didn't understand. I understood that, and we've talked about that basically on the show, not in this way. But it goes one step further, and this is what I think. Oh, I did that wrong. Hold on 1 second. Boom. Bam. Here we go. All right. Here's what I did not understand about the immune system last week that I do now. When he says that the vaccine-induced antibodies are long-lived, it means they're going to be there forever. He also basically explains that they are more robust. The virus-specific antibodies, the specific ones, they're more robust and they outcompete your non-specific natural immune antibodies. So in this case, you do have some natural non-specific antibodies in there that could handle any one of the variants. But the problem is these guys are bullies. They're bigger. they're stronger. They're more, you know, specific, and they're ready to do their job. So if Y gets the ball and starts coming around, our non-specific antibody is going to want to jump in there. Unfortunately, our vaccine-induced is going to push this out of the way and become a blocker to make sure that that antibody or that virus gets all the way in and wins and gets the touchdown and could possibly leave you dead. This vaccine is bullying away your remaining natural immune system. You do have these, but they're never going to work again. Do you realize how horrifying this is? Now think about the hundreds of millions of people that are lining up around the world, that are lined up outside of stadiums right now because CNN and Tony Fauci just said, I love this vaccine. Well, Geert here, one of the leading scientists in vaccine and immunology in the world, is telling you, everybody getting the vaccine is destroying their innate immune system. Those immune antibodies that were non-specific, that could have handled any of those thousands of variants we just saw you, they're designed for it. By being vaccinated, you just assured yourself that there are no antibodies inside of you to fight the variants. So if we have strayed far enough away from the vaccine-induced variant that we were looking at, the original spike protein, everyone that is vaccinated is now in horrible, horrible trouble. They're going to be attacked by variants and their bodies will not mount a defense. We are talking about carnage like we've never seen. He's going to get into more detail. Take a look at this.
When I was looking at some of the research around the challenges that they faced with the initial SARS-CoV, the first epidemic, and they tried to develop the vaccines, one of the things they found, certainly when they tested it on the ferrets, was that when they exposed them to a coronavirus again, they got a very severe response to it. Is this what you're saying, that we are putting ourselves in a position where we can then have much more severe disease, even to viruses that should normally be quite benign?
Well, you know, Philip, you see all my passion and my conviction, but I mean, I've been the last to criticize the vaccines in terms of could they in some regard be unsafe, because you know you would have even this exacerbation of disease due to antibodies that doesn't match very well with the coronavirus they're exposed to, etc. I know there is reports on this, and there is a lot of serious thoughts about this, but I think what we are talking about right now, the epidemic or the pandemic problem of having a population that is at no point during the pandemic, and to a large extent due to our intervention, has not a strong immune response. I mean, this is already serious enough. This is more concerning than one or the other adverse event that could maybe elicit it. I'm not downplaying it, but that could maybe be elicited because people have antibodies that do no longer match very well with the strain they were, or with the strain they are exposed to. And therefore, you know, they build a complex, they don't neutralize the virus, they build a complex, and this complex could maybe even enhance viral entry into susceptible cells and hence lead to exacerbation of disease. I mean, this may be possible, but the problem I'm talking about is a global problem. It's not an individual getting an adverse event. It's a global problem of, you know, making this virus increasingly infectious because we leave it all the time a chance, an opportunity to escape the immune system, and to drive this, to whip this up, you know, up to a level where the virus is so infectious that we can even no longer control it. Because, I mean, these highly infectious strains, some people think, oh, the virus is going to calm down and it will insert a number of mutations, you know, just to be gentle and kind with us. That's not going to happen. I mean, this highly infectious strain remain. It is not going to be spontaneous mutations that all of a sudden would become, you know, would make this virus again harmless, because such a virus would have a competitive disadvantage, could not be dominant anymore. So that's not going to happen. So we're talking about a very, very, very serious problem here.
This video, in about 40 minutes, manages to encapsulate what we have been shouting from the top of our lungs about on the High Wire for over a year. He's covering so many of the issues we brought up. In this case, the interviewer asked him about what we've been talking about, antibody-dependent enhancement, immune enhancement, or also called pathogenic priming, where the underperformance of the vaccine actually works as a catalyst to make the virus more deadly when it comes in contact with the person. But what Geert is saying is, I'm aware of that. And I recognize that there are a lot of scientists looking at that, which was news to me. Is that news to you? I mean, we are giving this vaccine. This has been the antibody-dependent enhancement has probably been the number one thing that we've been worried about here at the Informed Consent Action Network and on the High Wire. We've been trying to warn everybody. He says, sure, that's a problem. And I know there's lots of scientists looking at it, which is that's good to know. I don't know when they're going to do something about it. But he's saying, I'm talking about a much bigger problem than that. Yeah, that might get someone killed. That might be an adverse event for somebody that their body ends up, the vaccine actually works against them. Their antibodies help the virus enter the cells and they die. But that would be one person. I'm not worried about that. He said, I am worried about a global event. What I'm talking about is a global issue. And the global issue is the fact that we are helping this virus gain function. We are turning it into a killer in every single body that is getting it because, you know, it is underperforming and it's not designed for the job. And this is how I now hear it. We all talked about, is this lab created, and these gain of function studies in laboratories where we take the virus and we put it in a pangolin and then we put it in a bat and then we put it in a snake and then we put it into some human cells to see if we can gain function, meaning can we give it more deadly attributes? Well, now what this vaccine is doing is it's turning hundreds of millions of people around the world into a gigantic gain of function laboratory. And where I have told you before that in nature, viruses tend to mutate to become less deadly because if they kill their host, they don't move on. Then the evolution, they want to move on, so they stop killing their host. What he's saying is this isn't a natural pandemic. We have inserted ourselves here. We are now inserting a mechanism that we're teaching it to actually go the opposite direction. It's getting more deadly. And the way we're doing it, the other one will not compete. It's not going to move in the direction that a natural virus does because we're not acting naturally. We are putting immense pressure on it with an underperforming vaccine that is going to turn it into a Hulk. And his concern is that it will become so virulent and so deadly, there is nothing we can do to stop it. Now, listen to this.
I've seen the question many times, and quite frankly, I get asked the questions. We're coming to a point where people are going to have to take these vaccines. Well, that looks as though it's the reality, either in the context of work or in the context of travel. Based on what you're saying, they're in a lose-lose situation. What does this mean?
Well, what does this mean is very clear. It's very clear what this is going to mean. So let's consider the consequences of this, both at a population level and at an individual level. Because I would well understand if it, for the population, it's maybe not the best thing to do, but, you know, on an individual level, it's still okay. Yeah, then it's not an easy, that's not an easy question. But as a matter of fact, it's exactly the opposite. Well, it's not the opposite, it is detrimental, both on a population level as on an individual level. And I'm telling you why. I think the population level, I explained to you, we are increasingly facing highly infectious strains that already right now we cannot control, because basically what we are doing is that we are turning, when we vaccinate somebody, we are turning this person in a potential asymptomatic carrier that is shedding the virus. But at an individual level, I just told you that if you have these antibodies and at some point, and I'm sure this will, people can challenge me on this, but you know, reality will prove it. I think we are very close to vaccine resistance right now. And it's not for nothing that already people start developing, you know, new vaccines against the strains, etc. But what I was saying is that, okay, if you miss the shoot, okay, you could say nothing has happened. No, you are at the same time losing the most precious part of your immune system that you could ever imagine of. And that is your innate immune system, because the innate antibodies, the natural antibodies, the secretory IgMs, will be outcompeted by these antigen-specific antibodies for binding to the virus. And that will be long-lived. That is a long-lived suppression, and you lose every protection against any viral variant or coronavirus variant, etc. So this means that you are left just with no single immune response. With it's none. Your immunity has become nihil. It's all gone. The antibodies don't work anymore, and your innate immunity has been completely bypassed. And this while highly infectious strains are circulating. So I mean, if that isn't clear enough, I really don't get it. And people, please do read my what I posted, because it's pure science. And as everybody knows, I'm a highly passionate vaccine guy, right? And I have no criticism on the vaccines, but please use the right vaccine at the right place and don't use it in the heat of a pandemic on millions of people. We are going to pay a huge price for this. And I'm becoming emotional because I'm thinking of my children, of the younger generation. I mean, it's just impossible what we are doing. We don't understand the pandemic. We have been turning it in an artificial pandemic. Who can explain where all of a sudden all this highly infectious strain come from? Nobody can explain this. I can explain it, but we have not been seeing this during previous pandemics. During natural pandemics, we have not been seeing it, because at every single time the immunity was low enough so that the virus didn't need to escape. So back at the end of the pandemic, when things calmed down and it was herd immunity, it was still the same virus circulating. What we are now doing is that we are really chasing this virus, and it becomes all, increasingly infectious. And I mean, this is just a situation that is completely out of control.
I really don't know what to say. As he said, I don't know what it's going to take to get people to listen. What he's telling us is he believes we are just moments away from reaching and creating a coronavirus that is just purely vaccine resistant. And that may be a problem for one person, but he's talking about the global problem. Because once this virus is vaccine resistant, that is the only thing that people have gotten the vaccine can protect themselves from. And now it no longer works. And when a man who has made vaccines his whole life, that has run most of our vaccine programs around the world, or many of them, when he tells you this vaccine is doing the worst thing of all, it is destroying your innate immune system. It's destroying your natural immune system that would not have any problem fighting variants, would be very good at it. But in this case, it has turned it, he says, nil. It doesn't exist anymore. Your immune system is all gone. It's all gone. Meanwhile, it is fighting a war with a now deadly pathogen that the vaccine forced to be deadly. Folks, this isn't, and by the way, have you noticed that nowhere in here, as a scientist, think about who he is, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, all the people he's worked for, Gavi, global outreach programs, vaccinations around the world. You have to know the moment he sits in this interview, the moment he posts that letter on LinkedIn, he recognizes, I am about to destroy my legacy in vaccinations. He's trying to tell you, I still believe in vaccinations, but this is the wrong tool. You must listen to me now. And he's not couching any of this. He's not saying, my theory is this, and if I'm right, so that he can back away someday and say, well, as it turned out. He doesn't tell you if the vaccine ends up stopping the infection and transmission, then some of the things that I'm worried about won't happen. He is telling you it has already happened. I am not hypothesizing in the future. I am telling you all of these variants that they are reporting on coming out of South Africa, coming out of Brazil, coming out of the UK. Guess why they're coming from there? Guess where our vaccine trials were from day one? We have been mutating this virus with this product. We have made a grave and dangerous error. And the question we've got to ask ourselves is, what are we going to do about it? How serious is this guy? Does he recognize he's put it all on the line? He's almost getting tears in his eyes when he talks about his children and the world in the future. I mean, I saw this and I'm thinking it's like that science fiction movie, that scientist in the beginning of the science fiction movie. This is scary, scary stuff, and it is so important. But he's asked how important it is and why would he risk everything based on who he is. This is how this video finishes up. Take a look at this.
I see all these top scientists looking at these curves, at these waves, like somebody else is looking at the currency rates at the stock market. All they can say is, oh, it goes up, it's stabilizing, it may go down, it may go up, etc. I mean, that is not science. They don't have any clue. They don't even know whether the curve is going to go up exponentially or whether it's going to go down or whatever. They're completely lost, and that is extremely scary. That has been the point where I said, okay, guy, you have to analyze. You have to, but, you know, these people are not listening. That is the problem.
So you are, in effect, putting your reputation on the line because you feel so passionately about this. Because I guarantee you that no government, no health system is going to want to hear what you are saying. You're, in effect, almost giving fuel to the fire for an anti-vaxxer who doesn't want the vaccine.
No, not yet, because I've clearly also addressed some emails from anti-vaxxers. I'm not interested, but I'm clearly telling them that, it's so irrelevant, you know, whether you're a pro-vaxxer or an anti-vaxxer, etc. It is about the science, it's about humanity, right? I mean, let's not lose our time now with, you know, criticizing people or you know, I mean, anti-vaxxer, okay, if you're not an anti-vaxxer, you could be a stalker, you could be, you know, we like to stigmatize, because if you stigmatize people, you don't need to bother about them anymore. Oh, this guy's an anti-vaxxer, okay, I mean, he's out of the scope. Oh, he's a stalker, he's out of the scope. I mean, that is a discussion that is completely irrelevant at this point. Yeah, it's about humanity. And of course, I'm passionate. Of course, I mean, it's about your children. It's your family. It's my family. It's everyone, right? And it's simply for me, I put everything at stake because I've done my homework, right? And this is simply a moral obligation, a moral obligation.
Oh, and at the end. All right. So look, folks, I think that we've been handed a tool. This interview is a tool to try and save the world. I think that all of the science we've been looking at, I want to be clear, we have a scientific team that has people as smart as Geert on it. Many of them don't appear on this show. This is what we've been trying to report to you. But now someone has come forward and they've laid it out so clearly for all of your friends and family. Like, I don't know. I mean, you know, I don't want to listen to Del Bigtree. He's an anti-vaxxer. All those things that we run into. We have two scientists, a video made by two scientists that are having perhaps the most important conversation of our lifetime. If this man is not heard, our species may be in grave danger. That's right. I'm going to go on record here. Go ahead and play it back to me in 5 to 10 years and say Dell was overreacting, just like Geert, who was running, you know, most of the vaccine programs that made sense that were involved in what we were doing in this world. He is coming forward. He has put it all on the line. He says, I know they're going to call him. They're going to call him an anti-vaxxer, folks. We have got to get this video out to everyone we know before the Wikipedia comes out and says that this guy is an anti-vaxxer, despite the fact that he's been working for Bill Gates and everything else. You got to get this video out. And I'm saying, don't share the high wire this time. I want you to share his video. Don't put the high wire, don't put us around it to all of your friends. They can't hear it from an anti-vaxxer. Let them hear it from a world-renowned vaccine developer. There, we created a little bit.ly for you. You can click on, take that link and share it everywhere. Or if you just want to go to YouTube, it's Mass Vaccination in a Pandemic, Benefits versus Risks. Please share this video everywhere you can with every human you know. Think about it. Your pro-vaccine friends cannot argue with this video. They cannot say, oh, this is Bobby Kennedy or this is Sherry Tenbenny. This is one of their best and brightest that is warning the world. If we do not share this video, then we are complicit. Then we will be complicit in what could lead to one of the most catastrophic mistakes ever made with this planet and with our species.